Hello and welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to Combox Live, where the game lives on, it never dies. I'm Behram Kazi, you can find on Twitter at DefMango. With me is my good mate, Rob Barron, who you can find at Monsieur Judge on Twitter. And yesterday was a shit day at the T20 World Cup after two really exciting days, Rob. Today was a bit better.
It was all right. Yeah, It was all right. How are you doing? What do you think of Pakistan?
Yeah, well, I mean, we might as well start with that game because it was the most recent one. I mean, I thought Pakistan will give everyone a few more scares. They'll make it tighter than it would have been. And I suppose they'll take a 32-run victory versus the USA. I do believe that Monank Patel fucked up big time when he won the toss and opted to field first, because based on what we saw in the first game at the Sinhalese Cricket Club, the pitch slows down in the second innings. And I know that this was the first game under lights at the SCC. I still feel that the USA's best bet was to score maybe 150 to 160 and put Pakistan under pressure. So that was a wrong call, in my opinion. What do you think?
Yeah, get the panic in with Pakistan. We had it in the last game, didn't we, when they're chasing. That would have been a better plan. The captain didn't have a good day, did he? It was a shame because he batted really well the other day. And to see him get 3 off 10, he totally stuck the life out of that game, like pretty much single-handedly. So yeah, bad decision. And then I think he just hated the spin, didn't he? He couldn't really cope with the carom ball or the leggy. And that was kind of it. But I think on another day, they'd have chased them, USA. I don't think the pitch was that bad.
Yeah.
It sounds like a lot, but they've got, you know, Ranjani's having a great comp, isn't he? Wonderful stuff again. Lovely 50.
Yeah. I really like what he had to offer. What, 28 ball 50, 51 off 30 was USA's best bat. The innings came a bit too late, but Shayan Jahangir wasn't all too bad up top either. And this is the first time I've seen him do well. However, if I am to assess the conditions, Rob, I reckon in the first innings, you had a bit of new ball swing under lights. Netravalkar was getting some sort of purchase in the first over, but that went away quickly. It was quite a decent batting strip, I would say. Very, very batting friendly. And this was the first game under lights at the SCC, so we didn't really know what to expect. But there was no dew that came around, and that's probably what the USA was banking on. If anything, the pitch slowed down, and the ball did start to turn quite viciously in the second innings, which did ultimately cause USA's demise, because I think they're a better team than what we saw today. And they kind of just bottled the game in the post-power play overs, because they had an okay power play.
Yeah, I mean, what were they, 50 for one?
Yeah, they were 50 for one in the power play, or 50 for one after the power play. And at the 10-over mark, they were 68 for two. So in the four overs post-power play, they managed 18 runs and lost a wicket. And I think that was where the game was done.
Yeah, it was the skipper being 3 off 10 in that phase that derailed it. And Pakistan, when Babar was being boring Babar, you know, when he was 15 off 18, they were threatening to do the exact same thing. And it's strange how often innings kind of have the same template in cricket matches, particularly T20. And Babar hit himself out of trouble. I mean, he could have easily gone when he was 15 off. I think he was 15 off 19 and he slogged one to long on that could have easily been caught.
Yeah.
And then he smashed it for 5 minutes and turned his innings into a respectable one. On another day, that gets derailed because they kind of, you know, they Pakistan the hell out of it at the end. You know, 5 wickets in 10 balls, Shadab doing his thing. Lovely bat, Shadab, you know.
Yeah.
I mean, what's Shaheen doing, telling Usman he can't bat, nicking the strike off him and all that? Come on, lads. But Pakistan are Pakistan, as you well know. And this was actually pretty boring compared to what they did in the first game.
Yeah. I mean,
the biggest Pakistaning of all time.
Yeah, Pakistan, as you said, Pakistan hard in that game than they've ever Pakistan before, because they win games that they have lost entirely and lose games that are in the bucket. They kind of did both in the previous game, which is why I don't think it's recency bias. That was the most Pakistan that Pakistan have probably ever been. But today was a lot more, you know, comprehensive in the sense that this game was won at the 10-over mark in the second innings easily. And Pakistan actually paced their innings okay. I feel like 56 for 2 in the power play for Pakistan is decent. They don't often get to 60. They did get to 60 in the previous game and nearly didn't chase 148. So that's another story, of course. But at the 10-over mark, Pakistan were 85 for 2. 15-over mark, they picked things up, 137 for 3. And then they ultimately ended with 190 for 9 in 20 overs. I do feel that they left 10 to 15 runs on the field because there's a bit of a collapse in the end. But I mean, I'd be surprised if Shadab Khan is not player of the match in this game. What a blistering cameo from him. 30 off 12, exactly what Pakistan required. He's the senior player. He stepped up. He's the reason they got to 190 for 9. And then he was Pakistan's best bowler as well, I feel, with 2 for 26. He ultimately ended Monank Patel's sorry, you know, sort of stay at the crease. And then he also gets the big wicket of Shehryar Jahangir. So I think that, you know, the butt cheeks are aligned, as Jared likes to point out. He's bowling well, looks like a frontline bowler again. He was extracting vicious turn off the deck as well. And 30 of 12 is Abhishek Sharma-esque, right? Like, that's what he does. So really high impact knock and some great bowling to complement. Surely he's the player of the match, but knowing, you know, whoever hands out these awards, they'd probably give it to Farhan, won't they?
Right, we need to talk about that because they're pissing me off, the people that hand out the Man of the Match awards. Firstly, they need to start handing it out to the people that I back, right? That's the most important thing. But they need to do it fairly. I mean, the Scotland one, I backed Munsey at 9-1 the other day. He got 85, four catches.
Yep.
And who was it? Leask or Grieve? Leask, I think, got like a couple of people caught long on at the end.
Yeah.
Like, come on now. Munsey's Man of the Match.
Yeah.
Farhan got Man of the Match today.
Oh, did he?
He played really well.
He got player of the match? Man, they really need to rethink these things because Shadab Khan was the player of the match.
It's not the right decision. He was the probably the best bat and he was definitely the best bowler. I know Tariq got a few wickets at the end, didn't he? But it's when you get your wickets and how you bowl. And like you say, he got Jahangir, who was causing them big trouble.
Yeah.
And he tied up Monank in knots when he came to the crease and tied him down and got him out.
Yeah.
So he broke the game with the bat and he broke the game with the ball. So
absolutely.
Should have been Man of the Match, played really well.
Agreed.
He looked to have his stuff back in the Big Bash, which I watched pretty much every game of Shadab, and he's carrying it through to this, and it bodes very well for Pakistan now that they're deciding to play all the games in this World Cup.
Yeah.
It's because it's bat and ball. And when you've got, if Nawaz can afford to have a day off, let's not forget, he only got 5 off 10 and looked horrible.
Yeah.
And he didn't bowl great, I didn't think.
I actually, just to interject over there, I think he was having a howler. Sending him up the order was the right decision for me because left-hand, right-hand combination, sure. They were trying to usher it with Nawaz, essentially. It doesn't come off. 5 off 10 was ridiculously poor. Then he's taken down, you know, in his first over in the power play. But he does get Andres Hoose's wicket. Ends with 1 off 10 in the power play over. And then ultimately, he ends up with 1 for 21 in 3 overs. So I think he pulls things back for himself. He's a good fielder as well. Don't forget that. So even if Nawaz bottles it in one facet of the game, he can come back hard in the other two. And so I feel like both Nawaz and Shadab are probably the most integral cogs within Pakistan or Mike Hessen's system of multifaceted players. And their success in this World Cup or their campaign hinges on the success of their multifaceted cricketers, because Fahim Ashraf won them the previous game, another one of those multifaceted cricketers. Sime Ayoob has been all right. He's another one of them. And then you've got Shadab and Nawaz. So these four players are absolutely essential to Pakistan's chances.
So you briefly mentioned Ayoob there. What do you think? Like, they made him, was he number one all-rounder in the world when he was having the worst batting form of his life? In the rankings. So I'm not convinced by him. I thought, wasn't there an over today where they got 6 off the over and he had 5 dots? He's one of those. Like, he's just not really convincing me at the moment. I can see he's putting scores together like 20s and 30s. I don't think he's that guy that he was.
He struggles a bit on slower surfaces, but just right now when Pakistan played Australia at their own home turf, Sime Ayoob, for me, was the player of that series because he was incisive with the ball, got Travis Head twice, and he scored high-impact runs consistently. He hasn't quite come off in this World Cup, or in this game, rather, because I think his previous game wasn't all too bad. But I feel like he should just be tasked with maximizing that power play. There were a bit too many dots today, but I still feel that he's that sort of dynamic player who could really prove to be handy for Pakistan.
Well, he got 16 off 3 of his balls and 3 off the other 14 or whatever it was. Like, that's not what you quite want from him. Like, if he's in good form, he would have teed a fair few more, I think, in that power play. If they can get him into form, like, Pakistan are always mega dangerous. They're an extreme danger to themselves, as we saw in the first game.
True.
Just for odds, right? So we always gone about recency bias, and it's very easy to hyperbolize when you're on, you know, media or whatever. But that was, in terms of the odds, the maddest one they've ever done. And I've watched a hell of a lot of them, and I've watched the odds while they've been unfolding. And they were 690-1, Holland or Netherlands, 690-1. And with 12 balls to go, they were 1-4. You know, they were 80% to win that game. And but for O'Dowd's had enough pelters for dropping the catch completely unnecessarily.
I do not like that. I mean, spare the players. I mean, no one hates drop these catches on purpose.
no one hates drop catches more than me, Behram, but you don't need to assassinate the guy for it. Like, he didn't drop it on purpose. You know, practice more, sure, like everybody should. Should have taken it, but them losing the match because he dropped that catch, which is basically what happened. You know, I've struggled to see how they would have won. It was, what, 11 balls left. It was just after the first six, wasn't it, from Ashraf? He didn't do it on purpose. He's going to feel so bad anyway that he dropped that catch, because that was such a huge chance for the Dutch to take another big scalp in a World Cup. However, right, they did it. You just don't want to play Pakistan when there's a lot on the line, because you've no idea what they're going to do. And that has always been the same. They look really dangerous. There are such big question marks, as there always are. I thought Shaheen bowled a bit crap today.
Shaheen was terrible. I think that he's been really, really bad throughout this World Cup. Today, he goes for 17 in two power play overs, ends with 1 for 42. He gets slammed by Shubham for back-to-back sixes, right? And I mean, the game's done by then. Surely you can maybe pick up two wickets or something. I think Shaheen's form is a big concern going into the India game, because they probably play him on reputation. But Salman Mirza was really good in the previous game, 3 for 24 for him. And it'll be a tough decision for Mike Hessen. I think that in this particular India game, they might not drop the big players. But right now, I mean, I wouldn't pick Shaheen on current form. He was really good before the T20 World Cup, and now he's kind of bottling it. Also, I mean, a lot of people have been talking about Pakistan's spin bowling attack. And there's a super chat over here by Andy B. 2021 Rakshit, who is behind the scenes for us, if you could bring it up. He says, this Pakistan spin attack is ridiculous. It will take a Herculean effort to beat them at Premadasa. They win on Sunday. I think that's a bit of a... that's a bit of a pessimistic take, Andy, if you're an Indian fan. But let's talk a bit about Usman Tariq. He came into the side today for Salman Mirza. Ends up with very good figures of 3 for 27. I don't think he was as good as Shadab, because his 2 for 26 comes at a more crucial time for Pakistan. And by the time Usman Tariq comes in to bowl, the game is already done. But what do you make of him? Because a lot of people say that, oh, this guy chucks. But what really is happening is that he's got these double-jointed elbows or something. His arm can only bend to a certain point, and he's delivering the ball at a bend rather than chucking it. He's been cleared twice by the ICC, and he picks a 3 for 27 on his T20 World Cup debut. I like the character the guy brings, and I feel like he could prove to be a sort of a, you know, trump card if he has played in that India game.
Yeah, so lots to unpack with Tariq, right? So I am really surprised that he's doing so well at this level, to be honest. I can't work that out. Like, he's a bit like, he doesn't bowl like him, but he's a bit like Chris Green for me. Like, I don't understand why he's so successful in so many different conditions.
Well, he's got like four variations, right? They were showing them on broadcast today.
So Tariq is somebody, he doesn't chuck it, right? It shows the people that just go to that straight away, and I'm looking at you, Green, the other Green for Australia.
Cameron Threen.
He doesn't chuck it, right? He bowls with it because they keep testing it in labs. So if he passes the test, he's all right, right? So let's get away from that. He has an unusual action, and that is proven to be an extremely successful thing. You want to have an unusual action in T20 cricket. Go and look at all the best ones ever. They've all got unusual actions, pretty much. Bumrah has. Patharana's numbers are great. He's got an unusual action, all these release points. I don't understand why he's so effective, because it looks like it doesn't do that much when it comes out. But the big, long, exaggerated Ravi Ashwin pause bamboozles people, and he's one of those guys. I think if top class players played against him lots, they would work him out eventually and just smoke him. They'd be like, all right, this is what he's doing. But if you're facing him for the first time, then he looks like a nightmare, because you're setting yourself, and he's like, well, come on then, get rid of the ball, and he doesn't. And then when it comes, they're like, oh god, it's a bit like the Sam Curran 40 mile an hour nonsense ball.
I mean, another guy who did this for Pakistan was Mohammad Hafeez. He had quite a long pause in his bowling, but Hafeez didn't have all those variations that Usman Tariq has. I feel like if they play him enough, like the best teams across the globe, then he could eventually be found out. But this is a guy who's only ever going to play this T20 World Cup. He is not thinking about the future. He is trying to cash in on the now, which is what makes him more potent as well, because he's high on confidence. And he's got a really sprightly sort of character. I don't know if you've ever heard any interviews, but he holds himself or carries himself really well. And you know, if the wicket is turning, then I do believe Pakistan's spin attack can be potent, because Nawaz has been in super form, and 1 for 21 in 3 overs wasn't bad today. Shadab has been the best performer for Pakistan today, even with the ball, his 2 for 26. Abrar was kind of off. 1 for 30 today after being none for 12 in two power play overs. I think he could have had a better day. But then there's Syam Ayoob as well with the carom ball. So there are lots of different options.
And that's what Hessen wants, right? So you have people that can do lots of stuff. And if somebody has a bad day, then someone else can come in and do that job. And yeah. and that's great for a T20 team. I really like Tarek as somebody who appears in a World Cup. It's brilliant. That's the kind of thing I want to see. I don't want to see loads of people doing exactly the same thing. Hmm. I can't work out why he's so successful, but he is. It's a bit like, again, he doesn't bowl like him, but when Ajanta Mendis turned up, he was impossibly good.
Yes.
You know, I remember the face, other than Sehwag, I remember the faces of the test team from India when he was bamboozling the best players in the world ever at spin, other than Sehwag. And they were like, Dravid was like, what the hell is this? How on earth do I face this? And he rocked up in a T20 World Cup. Did he get 7 against Zimbabwe or something and got the most wickets out of anybody?
So what I remember with Ajanta Mendis is that there was this Asia Cup in Pakistan and India played Sri Lanka in the final and Mendis got like a 6 for. And then he had a really good T20 World Cup campaign in one of those 2012, 2014 World Cups, which are both mangled in my head. It's like the same goddamn event happened twice because the conditions were similar. But Mendis does eventually get found out and then, you know, he's history.
Well, this is it. So when you're mystery, so he got 6 for 8. I just looked it up. Wasn't far off. He got 6 for 8 against Zimbabwe. And basically, if you're a lesser team and you haven't seen somebody who's got a completely unusual way of bowling, it's a nightmare. And then by the end of his career, that the flame burnt out pretty quick, didn't it, with Mendis? He was like the best ever for a while, and then he kind of completely disappeared.
Hmm.
I met him once in a casino. It was really funny. I'd watched him. I'd watched him get countless Man of the Match awards. It was in Australia, and Jai Wardner always said, "Oh no, he doesn't speak any English. He speaks a really rare Sri Lankan dialect. He doesn't do interviews. Doesn't speak any English." And I met him in Melbourne Casino, and he's a big hero of mine. I've got a signed picture of him up here on the Wall of Fame.
And, you saying you've got pictures of other cricketers who aren't Chris Gayle?
Yeah, there's loads of Inzamams up there. Signed Inzamams up there.
Nice.
I would do a tour, but I'll definitely break the camera and Rakshi will get really angry at me.
Anyway, next time I'm in London, I'll just swing by.
Sure. I'd seen all these interviews where they tried to interview him and he couldn't speak English and all that. And then I went, hi, Ajanta, any chance I could just say hello, you're here? And he just spoke to me in perfect English for like 3 minutes at like total con that he couldn't speak any English. Fair play to him. Anyway, I think that Tarek will get found out eventually. But if you're trying to win a World Cup, have a mystery guy in there. And Pakistan, they're the best team for bringing mystery, aren't they?
True. And I mean, look, they could even preserve him, not play him versus India and unleash him in the Super 8s. And if they've got like England and New Zealand in the Super 8s on wickets that are slow and turning, well, Usman Tarek could be really potent. Anyway, last bit on Pakistan that I want to discuss is that Babar's been under the pump. He has been completely, you know, terrifying his own teammates in T20 cricket because he's been that bad. Today he's 15 off 18. Then he starts to slam a slow left armer in Harmeet Singh, which shocked me, right? Ends with 46 of 32, which for other people might be a par knock. For Babar, that's a plus knock. And especially, you know, if he goes out, Pakistan screw up the consolidate phase. So I think had this been any other player, I would have said par knock, but for Babar, I'm going to bump this up to plus knock just because how bad he's been.
Yeah, I think it could have been. I mean, again, having watched all the Big Bash, he was atrocious in the Big Bash, like appallingly bad. 102 strike rate.
202 runs in 11 innings at the Big Bash League, 250s in which one was garbage and the other one was a catch-up knock. Oh, well, one was okay because it came in a win or whatever, and the other one was a catch-up knock. I feel that, you know, he just was mentally toast over there, eventually being denied the single as well and then coming back early. But he had the lowest strike rate for any Big Bash player to score 200 runs in a campaign. And they've been 350 of them. He was number 350. So I think this should boost his confidence a bit. Although I still don't see him as that middle over spin negotiator because he can't be a spin basher. But Jared thinks that Hessen wants him to be a fail-safe batter. He couldn't do it versus the Netherlands. Today he somewhat manages that.
So the thing is, if you've got one of those, the Badrinath, right, the firefighter, use him when you need him. And I think no manager or no coach has yet managed to work with Babar in a way that says, listen, mate, sometimes you're not going to put your pads on. We don't need you today. It's a road. We're going to hoof it everywhere. No thanks. If we get 4 down early, you can do it. You know, he's the best ever at 30 off 30 on a shit heap when you need it. Like, he's so good at that. But you don't need him. You don't need him against the USA, really, or you shouldn't do. And on another day, the one when he's 15 off 18 and he has an ugly slog that falls a metre short of long on, he's out.
Yeah.
And that's an awful knock then. He shouldn't be a number four in this type of tournament unless they're in big trouble early.
Yeah.
And when you've got Ayoub at the top of the order and Farhan and Agger and all the rest of it. Maybe you are two or three down early sometimes. And you go, right, Baba, can you just calm us down, elongate this batting order for a bit because we've got some really good hitters at the end. That's fine. I think Baba is perfect for this team when they have a bad start. But when they have a good start, it takes a strong coach to go, pads off, please, Baba. Yeah. We don't really want you to field either. If you could just say you've got a headache, we'll see you in the next one. But I don't think he's the guy that will do that. I mean, I don't know him, but from what I saw in the Big Bash, he didn't seem to handle it very well when things weren't going his way.
I suppose, Rob, if you know you've crossed the 10-over mark and your team's going well, then there's no reason for him to come out. You send in your Shadabs and your Fahims, right, or Nawazes. They're all better hitters than Babar. But I still feel that he should draw some sort of confidence from this knock. But Saibs Adha Farhan has started this tournament with a bang, right? Like, he is an okay player. He does well on occasion and he's been all right for Pakistan. I feel like he does slow down and has a strike rotation issue. But I mean, today he scores a 27-ball 50. He's muscling the ball, which is not what every Pakistani can do, by the way. Often when Pakistan batters mistime it, they're out. Saibs Adha mistimes it, it's often six, right? That's a big plus point. He ends up with what, 73 or 41 or was it 73 or 42? Something like that. 73 or 41. I think he was brilliant today and he shouldn't have been player of the match, but I quite like what he had to offer up front because he didn't really slow down. He did manage to keep the intent high and that's something which is rare in Pakistan batters, especially top order batters.
If you want to win a World Cup, you've got to have certain players hitting form, the ones that you need these guys to come off. And if you've got the in-form fine, he could have a two-week blitz where he just murders people. If he has the bad form or the what his numbers would suggest he would be, Pakistan probably don't win this World Cup. He's probably going to fail more than he doesn't. But he's gone off like a train. Strike rate 180, whatever it was today. Great. Like, they're such a dangerous bunch, Pakistan, and they always have been. They always will be. I don't see them winning it. I never do. But there is a team that I can never apply any kind of logic, sense, or numbers to Pakistan because they confound everything. They confound the laws of the universe time and again. But overall, it was a pretty boring game.
Obviously, there wasn't much.
When it was 50 for one, I thought, hello, if this, you know, just if they can tonk a spinner out the ground here in over seven, you know, let's carry on with the hitting, then Pakistan might have gone, oh, now what do we do?
Yeah.
But they kind of tied themselves up. It was a bit disappointing in the end. But USA's batting has shown quite a lot of fun in this World Cup. They got 200 in one of the games, don't forget, against a proper team. there's plenty for them to build on.
Yeah, I mean, I like the look of USA, honestly. I feel like they gave India a proper scare. Can we talk about Shadley Wan-Schalkwyk, one of the better cutter bowlers that I've seen in recent times? He took 2 for 8 in 2 power play overs, ends up with 4 for 25 overall. Back-to-back figures of 4 for 25 versus India and Pakistan, which is 8 of 50 in 8 overs. And he's kind of built like David Visa. He even has the same face structure as David Visa, not the same kind of batting, of course, as David Visa. But I feel like he's probably earned himself a franchise gig because you need cutter bowlers in this day and age, and he's been really good at that. I mean, this is the same guy who got Ishan Kishan, Tilak Verma, and Shivam Dubey out in the same over.
Yeah, I mean, he's done a bit of Abu Dhabi Knight Riders and LA somebody, I think. He can play, right? His pace doesn't look threatening, but when he gets a bit of movement, they're struggling against him. I think he's come across two teams that have underestimated him, I think, and haven't planned properly and probably haven't watched the videos or haven't done the work that they should have done. And again, if you're facing bowlers that you don't normally face, a slightly different bowling type with a different action and different movement, you're asking for trouble. And India asked for trouble and Pakistan asked for trouble and they both got it against him. Unfortunately, the other lads didn't really back him up. I thought Mohsin bowled all right.
To be fair to the USA, they did lose Ali Khan to injury and he was a big miss. And the guy who replaced him is, by the way, Ehsan Adil, who featured for Pakistan in the 2015 ODI World Cup. He played Australia in that quarterfinal where Wahab Riaz bowled that spell, right? So it's funny how he's made his USA debut versus the team that he first represented in international cricket. He had a howler. Netravalkar also had a howler. The second best bowler for the USA today was Mohammad Mohsin, another man of Pakistan origin, 1 for 27 for the leggy. But obviously he wasn't as good as Shadab. I feel that there is some sort of juice in that USA bowling, but Netravalkar needs to have a good day. Ali Khan needs to be fit. He's still a part of the squad, so you never know, fingers crossed. But now that they've lost two games, it's going to be really tough for them to make it to the next round. I do hope that they win a game because I like this team. And then, you know, there were missed fields. There were missed half chances as well. Not that Pakistan were brilliant in the field. I mean, there were a lot of missed fields over there. Abrar missed a run out and Khwaja Nafi, the subfielder, dropped Milind on five. But I do feel that, you know, there is something in this USA team where if they are provided enough exposure and enough game time, they can really build towards the future and become a pretty decent T20 team.
Yeah, there's lots to build on there. Like I say, the batting looks very good. The bowling looks slightly limited, I thought, again. But getting exposure at this level only makes them better. And considering, you know, 10 years ago, you even talking about USA having any sort of cricket presence. And look at them now, like fair play.
Yeah.
They're doing well. I think if they can somehow blood a couple of homegrown domestic Yankee Doodle Dandy Americans, that could help American cricket a lot because they will start getting some fans watching at home who are actually American rather than, you know, the community from all over the place. I mean, who got the 50 today? Ranjane. Didn't his granddad play for India?
Like, oh, did he?
It's great how diverse the side is. But if they want to get some bucks and get some American TV cash, they could be anything. You know, you don't have to be that popular a sport in America to get some serious cash.
Yeah.
The future's pretty bright for the USA, I think.
Yeah, I agree. I think college cricket could really boost things over there because every college sport really, you know, elevates the stature of that sport. And yeah, they maybe need someone from Texas to turn up one day and score a quick 550. And they're like, oh, all right, we got our cowboy. Anyway.
Yeah, you don't want Alan Stanford turning up again, though, do you?
Yeah, you don't want that. Anyway, last point on Pakistan. All I'd like to say is that Salman Ali Agha is doing a decent captaincy job with his bowling changes. I would like to see slippers or first slippers in for the spinners in the future because I feel like even though that didn't cost Pakistan today, I mean, it could cost Pakistan another day because when the ball is turning, you want a slipper in all the time. And he was a bit defensive in that regard. But anyway, that kind of wraps up our review of the last game, Pakistan versus the USA, which Pakistan won by 32 runs. And we've got two more games to review over here on day four of the T20 World Cup. But before we go there, we shall be taking a short break. You guys are watching Combox Live with Behram and Rob Barron. So go nowhere. We will be back very, very shortly.
Cricket boards actually make watching their games almost impossible now. I spend almost as much time trying to find where I can view it as I do actually following the action. That is why I use NordVPN. They let me find all the cricket I want to watch while protecting me from the nasty side of the internet. Nord will free your cricket matches. Grab your exclusive NordVPN deal by going to nordvpn.com/goodareas to get a huge discount off your NordVPN plan plus 4 additional months on top. It's completely risk-free with Nord's 30-day money-back guarantee. Watch every match with NordVPN.
Welcome back to Combox Live. You guys are with Behram and Rob Barron, which we should probably call our show, I don't know, Deaf Barron, something fun. Because weirdly enough, Rob, I'm not sure if you know this, but it's a combo people quite enjoy. They already love you and they hate me less when I'm with you.
Thank you, people of the internet. All my friends hate me, so that's the main thing.
Yeah, and anyway, let's move on to, I suppose, the New Zealand game. I mean, New Zealand smashed the UAE to smithereens. They won by 10 wickets and 28 balls to spare. And I mean, I actually liked the UAE's call to win the toss and bat first. They backed themselves to get a big total, and kudos to Mohammad Wasim for that. But I mean, this was a flat deck at Chennai. The ball's not been turning at Chepauk, and you know, 173 for 6 was below par, slightly below par on this deck, when especially you know that New Zealand have some really, really explosive batters in there. So they kind of lost the game in the first innings for me.
Yeah, it was a shame that they didn't kick on. It actually turned, I thought, on the amazing catch. There's been two amazing catches in this World Cup, but the Chapman's Mitchell, I think, relay catch when Sharafu was just starting to motor and he actually chewed like 55 or 47 doesn't look good on that pitch, does
no.
it, in the final reckoning. But if that ball goes for 6, maybe he's away and maybe they get 190 and then it's a bit of fun. The 173 was never enough. It didn't feel like it was enough. None of us said it was at halftime. It wasn't going to be defended by that bowling lineup.
Yeah.
But Wasim did his thing. He continues to impress at these big events and against the big teams. Like, he's different gear, Wasim, and has been for quite a long time now. He's held up UAE cricket for quite a while. I thought those two batted pretty well. Like I say, catches, as we've seen many times in this World Cup, can pivot matches in like big style. Look at O'Dowd. And it was a very, very good piece of cricket to dismiss him. And then they stuttered for a bit after that, and they kind of chugged their way to, 66 off 45 is fine. But as Cypher and Finn Allen proved, it was too good a deck to be getting 170 and thinking you're going to defend it.
I mean, I remember we were discussing the game in the chat, and Shayan asked me for a summary. And I was like, really, really flat deck, very small margin for error. And even if the UAE do well over here, they get to 180, and New Zealand are more than capable of, chasing down 180 odd without any fuss. The Chapman X Daryl Mitchell catch was brilliant, and New Zealand caught really well. There was a couple of misfields in there, but their general catching was really good. The one thing that really pissed me off in this first innings, Rachin Ravindra bowls three overs, goes for 19 runs. Jimmy Neesham bowls an over, goes for 7 runs. Those two combined for none for 26 in 4 overs. And according to Varun, 3 attacking shots were attempted off Rachin. 1 attacking shot was attempted off Neesham. So 4 attacking shots attempted in those 4 overs and just 26 runs pinched without losing a wicket. You cannot be doing that versus a non-existent 5th bowler. And New Zealand are going to struggle over here because Bracewell is out of the World Cup. Right? He's injured. So their 5th bowler is a worry. And the UAE just clearly missed the memo that you have to kind of plunder in those overs, and they do the opposite.
So you're absolutely bang on, and that's a bit of associate naivety, isn't it? If you have to roll the dice on good decks when you get bowlers that aren't as good as the other ones, and when you see that lineup and you go, right, Santner, Lockie, Tough, Duffy, Henry, Tough, someone else, whack. At least they murdered Phillips in his last over when he inexplicably bowled the 19th, was it?
Oh my God, what have you reminded me? So he actually,
underarm, wasn't it?
Yeah, Glenn Phillips bowls an over before that, takes a wicket and concedes 3 runs. And I'm like, okay, yeah, that worked out brilliantly. He gives him the 3rd last over, I think, Santner. And I mean, he does well with the ball, Mitch Santner. Very reliable, 1 for 23, great stuff. Weird captaincy, man. Phillips has taken a part for 27 runs in that over. He's the reason why the UAE even managed to get to 173. And I mean, that sort of mistake can cost you a game versus one of the big boys.
Yeah, maybe they'll learn a lesson from that. But as you say, 5th bowler issues are too much in a World Cup because look at England, for example, and how amazing they are at hitting at the death. If you bowl a clown at the death against England, you're going, right? That's it. And you can't bowl 4 overs of... And like Varun said, you've got to attack these people. If Jimmy Neesham comes on, right, I shout at the TV a lot when Jimmy Neesham is bowling, why aren't you whacking him? Because he doesn't do anything surprising with the ball. He lands it kind of where you think he's going to land it, at the pace you think he's going to bowl it. So stand there and smoke him back over his head into the crowd, right?
Yeah.
I don't think he's... And Ravindra shouldn't be bowling 7 dots in 18 balls. He shouldn't. Even if you're milking him, you can't let him bowl 7 out of 18 dots. He should be on over maximum, and you should be, getting him over the fence. And they didn't do that, did they?
He should have conceded at least 29 runs in his 3 overs, and he goes for 19. Right. Jimmy Neesham is way past his prime. He's a bit of a passenger in T20 cricket these days. You can't be just pinching 7 runs off that over. You have to recognize that this is a flat deck. New Zealand are a really good batting team, right? Their weakness is the 5th bowler. You capitalize on the weakness. You've given them the game on a plate versus their 5th bowler. And I mean, Santner's the best bowler for them with 1 for 23, but his captaincy mistakes kind of, make me a bit worried about New Zealand because, they've got a favorable draw like Pakistan. They've got the easier of the two Super 8 groups, right? And you think of New Zealand and Pakistan making potential semi-final runs because of the easier group. But I mean, those sort of mistakes could really screw things over for their campaign.
Yeah, I think so. Just going back to UAE a minute, I think UAE struggle because they have no smoke after the 6 down, like Parashar and Hyder Ali. These guys can't whack it. So they probably deferred risk, where, like you say, you can't get below par against New Zealand if your bowling's not all that. You have to get above par, so you must gamble.
And they didn't gamble. You learned that from the previous game, right? Versus New Zealand versus Afghanistan.
Yeah, and that is, it's slight naivety. And it's again, the coach or the captain or both have got to go, listen, lads, if we're going to win this game, we need to tee off these overs. And end of story, it's got to go in the crowd. If we get out, never mind. We're going to lose anyway if we get 170. Hmm. New Zealand, nobody really fancied New Zealand for this competition. Again, the Big Bash Finn Allen, if he turns up for this competition, you got to get him out if you're going to beat New Zealand. He's extremely dangerous. Cypher also had a good bash.
Sorry to interject over here.
Finn Allen, didn't he, today?
Yeah. I think the UAE started off brilliantly, of course. 50-1 in the power play for an associate team is good. And they made the same mistake that USA did, right? Those four overs post power play, they score 27 runs and don't lose a wicket. 27 for none. So at the 10-over mark, they're 77-1. New Zealand, on the other hand, was 78 for no loss in the power play. They killed the game in the power play. So you have to have or keep these things in mind. I get it that you don't have a lot of batting insurance, but you've got to give yourself the best chance to win. And you know what? I actually like Mohammad Wasim a lot. I think he's a really good power player. Both him and Alishan Sharafu played the uppercut really well. But Wasim, 37 ball 50. Okay, fine. Associate team, I'll cut him some slack. Unbeaten on 66 of 45, why is your best bat who has come to open the innings only facing 45 out of 120 deliveries in an innings? I think that's another mistake.
Yeah, fair point. I think it's just a bit disappointing that they didn't think more. Like you say, like he must have been able to farm strike better than 45 out of 120. That's a good point. Yeah. I didn't notice that at the time. New Zealand showed how it was done. I don't think we learn a great deal about New Zealand today. I thought they bowled fine. How about both of them, USA and UAE, were 50 for one after the power play today?
Yeah, that is quite fascinating, isn't it?
Shout out to Haider Ali, by the way. Not that one. Bowled today. Very good stuff, particularly his first three overs. Oof. Everyone else was getting smoked going at 12, 13, 14 and over. And he was sat there in the power play bowling to these two hitters. Going up five.
Yeah.
And he ended up going for none for 27 off his four, but his first two, his power play bowling was magnificent.
You've probably seen a bit of Haider Ali in leagues and stuff, but I recently saw a lot of him versus Pakistan. I think UAE played a tri series and an Asia Cup. Yep, that's correct. And Haider Ali, I mean, not that Pakistan really know how to play slow left arm as well, although Harmeet goes for plenty today because Babar decides to flip a switch. But Haider Ali has been consistently good. This guy is frugal as hell. In two power play overs, he gives away just 8 runs, and he goes for 10 off his last two balls, which is why his figures read none for 27 in 4 overs. But even after that effort, New Zealand, after 11 overs, were 131 for no loss. 4 of those overs were bowled by Haider Ali, in which he concedes just 27 runs. So that paints a picture of how poor the seamers were. And, you know, that's the thing with Tim Seifert and Finn Allen. You cannot target a length. They have shots both off the front foot and the back foot, and that's what makes them so dangerous. They're a really, really underrated opening batting pair for me. Again, they've bashed Pakistan so frequently that I know a lot about them, and Big Bash League Finn Allen was terrific. I think top run scorer or something. 27 ball 50 for him, unbeaten 84 off 50, but he wasn't close to what Seifert managed, man. Seifert was just, I think, a couple of notches higher. 23 ball 50 for him, 89 of 42. Back-to-back 50s in this T20 World Cup. They were showing on broadcast of how he used to model his stance around Brendan McCullum, and now he's modeling his stance like Faf du Plessis. And I find that very fascinating, Rob.
Well, if he can get Faf du Plessis' career luck points in his game, he will win the World Cup for New Zealand. It's interesting that basically his strike rate is about 20 lower than Finn Allen across their careers in all T20s. Hmm. And for him to face 8 fewer balls and score 4 more runs is quite a big deal, actually. I think they're a very, very good opening partnership, those two. And you've got to get them out, because New Zealand actually bat quite long. I think they're going to get found out with the fifth bowler. It was way too apparent today. And they've got some squad injuries that are going to make it difficult for them to find the fifth bowler. And I don't think that a big team will let them off if Ravindra's just rolling his arm over. He's going, isn't he, against any of the power teams. He's getting bashed. But all of the teams have got weaknesses. Abhishek's not very well. That doesn't look great for India. I don't know how fit Bumrah is and all that. This is another one of those, you know, India, Australia can't play spin, and they've got to play in Sri Lanka a lot.
Yep.
There is a way that New Zealand win this tournament. There's a way that any of the big teams win it, I think.
I don't know about New Zealand, man. I feel like best case scenario for them is the final, because like I said, favourable Super 8 draw. I mean, they need to beat England, which they can, right? Let's be fair. Even with the fifth bowler issue, they can beat England. And they could beat Pakistan as well. And Sri Lanka, if they make it, are probably the weakest of all those four teams in that Super 8 group. So if Glenn Phillips has a day in the semi, perhaps they make the final. But ultimately, I feel like they'll be found out and they cannot win this. I feel like the Bracewell injury could really be costly because he's someone who can give them, like, you know, three overs, and he can smash it as well. Him and Santner actually are quite useful down the order. And New Zealand are one of those teams like Pakistan who bat deep and do have quality deep as well, right? Like, not a lot of teams have that. They do bat deep. Like, Sri Lanka tries to assemble 8-3 formation as well, but Hasaranga's injured, so I don't think they can do that anymore. But the quality wanes, right? Pakistan and New Zealand have quality all the way down. In fact, you could make a case that Pakistan's hitters are better in the lower order than what we see in the middle order.
Yeah, it depends where you bat Mitchell, really. But Santner's batting form in the last 12 months has been off the charts. He's doing incredibly well. I am not writing off New Zealand because that opening partnership with both of them in form and Seifert finding hitting sixes all around the ground a lot easier than he used to. I think if you can get the good Lockie, who bowled a bit bad today, but very well in the first one, he bowled one or two good overs out of his four today. I don't know. I'm not writing New Zealand off because I think there are holes in every team, including India.
Fair enough. All right, just before we move on to the next game, I want to talk a bit about Alishan Sharafu because when it comes to his stroke making, I was quite impressed. I thought he was a very exciting bat. And of course, he's not as good as Wasim. But, you know, he slightly needs to up the ante over here. Scores a 39 ball 50 and 55 or 47 is a net negative knock. If he can perhaps score that 55 runs of, I don't know, 39 balls, that'll be much better. And these two guys, Wasim and Sharafu, if they come off versus another one of those associate teams, I don't know who else they have in their group, I've forgotten. They don't actually, because Afghanistan is there, and then Canada, yeah. So I think they can scrape away with a victory or two. If they have a good game versus Afghanistan, you never know. So I like what Lal Chand Rajput is doing with this team. UAE are a pretty decent side when it comes to associate nations, but they need that extra bit of oomph to get across the line, especially if you're playing at Chennai.
Yeah, they miss, we'll come on to Namibia in a minute, but they miss the big power at the end. You need a couple of guys. Look at what Pakistan can do. They can just go, oh, well, this one didn't come off, but we've got this one, and then we've got this one, and then even Shaheen can hit a six, and he's number nine. You know, he's played some decent T20 knots. They don't have the strength in depth. That's pretty common for associate sides.
Yeah,
they need a bit more power, but reasonable effort from UAE. I think tactically they were quite bad, but reasonable effort with the bat.
And in the field, I don't think they made many mistakes in the field. And that's another trend with associate teams, right? That they often have these howlers in the field. UAE were fine.
Yeah, they were okay. They fielded fine. I think I go on about it all the time, but that's the thing. If you're coach of a lesser team, you know, lesser team on paper, you've got to be as good as the other team at fielding at least. And you probably got to be better if you're going to beat them. Yeah. You have to do all those one percenters. And if you've got people that aren't very good at fielding, you've got to upskill them. You've got to make them better at fielding. And it is possible, you know, you say, I haven't got the money and stuff. It doesn't cost anything to throw a ball at someone.
Yeah.
It's something that you have to practice loads. And you can get better at it. Look at someone like Adil Rashid. He was pretty terrible fielder when he started playing cricket, and he's all right now. You know, you have, and then you look at someone like Mujeeb, who's been utterly terrible for his whole career. He can't be practicing because you can improve at these things. If you hit the ball to him when he's at square leg, you've got four runs. It's like having a washing line stood there when Mujeeb's fielding.
Yeah.
Anyway, I'm not going to get bogged down with this because we've got homes to go to, Behram.
Yeah, yeah. Well, just some pointers for the UAE. Bat a bit faster, continue to keep up the good work in the field. And cash in on the fifth bowler, honestly. Like, they were smashing all the frontline guys. And to be fair, Matt Henry was bowling short outside off with a short third and kept getting uppercut. So that's not going to work versus the better teams either. Anyway, that means that we are left with one more game to review on Combox Live today. And before we go there, we will be taking a short break. You guys are watching Combox Live with Rob Barron and Behram. And go nowhere, because we will be back after a short break.
I once made a pair in a club game, which is almost impossible to do. But I've been obsessed with batting my entire life. And so I put that into my new book, The Art of Batting. Being that I'm not very good at that skill, I decided to talk to other people who were. So I hit up as many contacts as I could just to talk about batting. Rahul Dravid, Brian Lara, AB de Villiers, Kumar Sangakkara, Ross Taylor, Susie Bates, Nasser Hussain, Ian Chappell, and so many, many, many more. I wanted batters to talk about how they and their friends made runs, because that is the art of batting.
Welcome back to Combox Live. You guys are with Behram and Rob. We've already reviewed the last two games of Day 4 of the T20 World Cup. Let's come to a rather fun one, probably the most entertaining game of the day. Netherlands versus Namibia. The Dutch defeated Namibia by 7 wickets and 12 balls to spare, which was a pretty good win for them. Also, a good toss to win for Scotty Edwards, who, you know, on a surface that was not the easiest pitch, I suppose. It was sluggish. There was some turn on offer, right? Predictable turn, but still more turn than anywhere else at the Kotla, right? They were showing that graphic. I feel like fielding first was the right call. And ultimately, I also believe that the Netherlands are just a bit more high on quality than Namibia. That's what it came down to for me.
Yeah, I think Bas Dereda played brilliant. And he's a big stage player. I remember that game against Scotland where he got 105 to qualify them for some World Cup. He's different class when he needs to be. And if you're an associate team, that is a great thing to have. Is a guy that produces on the big stage, whereas O'Dowd doesn't. You know, you look at his numbers through the year and through the years leading up to World Cups, and then the World Cups have come along and he hasn't performed. Dereda just brings the good stuff when he needs to, and his 72 or 48 was the difference. And he bowled really well and got a couple of couple of important poles.
I really like him, man. I know that.
And he got a run out, got a direct hit, didn't he, at one point as well? Like, he's a proper player. You need a guy like that in your side.
He didn't start off well because before he bowls, he drops a catch, right? And then he also misses the run out once he drops the catch. But then he comes back real strong, right? Like, I mean, his 2-for-20 in 3 overs was solid. Paul Van Meekeren was injured today, and he essentially plays the Paul Van Meekeren role for the Dutch in this game, bowling those cutters at a hard length. So great with the ball, 2-for-20 in 3 overs. And then with the bat, he was exceptional, right? This was the sort of pitch, I was talking to Robbie about this because he was on comm. So I was like, Robbie, how would you assess these conditions? And he was like, it's the sort of pitch where you take the spinners down the ground and you play square of the wicket when you're playing pace. That's exactly what Bas Dereda does. And he returns with the wonderful, you know, numbers with the bat as well. 38 ball 50, which was the need of the hour with this sort of chase because they weren't chasing a lot of runs. And unbeaten on 72 or 48. So sort of performance or the sort of performance that would make his dad, Tim Dereda, proud. And he always comes up in conversation, doesn't he, whenever we talk about Bas Dereda?
Yeah. He did great. He played really well. Like, I watched the whole game. I thought Namibia when they first turned up in World Cups, it was the bomb squad, wasn't it? And they had 6 hitters all the way down. Now Frielink is not the number 8 that comes in and tonks it and bowls. He's the opening bat. And he didn't smack. He got 30 off 26. Not enough. Like, you must, if you're facing 26 in the power play or at the start of the innings, you've got to be getting 40 and you probably want to be getting 50.
Yeah.
And if you're Abhishek, you're knocking on the door of 100 if you face 26 balls.
True.
It's not enough. And so they then lose his power at the end. And they don't have Wiese whacking it at the end anymore.
True.
So they don't have what they used to have, which is you cannot have Zane Green coming in and scoring 10 off 10 like he does every single time I've ever seen him play. you can't have that guy doing it. He's not the guy you need. You need somebody that can smoke it. And basically they mucked about too much. Like Lofty Eaton, what is his role? Because it's not a run a ball 40. That doesn't win you games. It wasn't the pitch that New Zealand played on. That was a very, very good pitch. It was a bit low, it was a bit spinny, and you had to work it out. And I thought that Namibia didn't play the roles, the clarity of role is something I bang on about all the time. They didn't play their roles very well. Like Erasmus used to be the boring Babar guy, right? They just knocked it around, made sure that you get a respectable score, and the bomb squad like bashed it around him. Today he came in like a scalded cat. Because the other guys were scoring at a run a ball, the ones that should have been smoking it, he then goes for 18 off 9 because he's playing frenetically on a difficult pitch. That's not his game. It should have been that the other ones are whacking around Erasmus and it went the other way around. Erasmus tried to whack around everyone else blocking and they buggered it up, really. Like 156 was 15 short of a good game, of a really good game.
Yeah, and I agree. And it was weird to see them, you know, like not go as fast at the start because, like I said, not the easiest pitch to bat, a bit sluggish. There was a bit in it for the spinners as well. But Namibia, after the power play, were 40 for 1. After the 10-over mark, they were 65 for 2. 108 for 4 in 15 overs. And then ultimately, they had a bit of a boost towards the end. So 156 for 7 is what they ended up with. If you compare that to the Netherlands, they were consistently ahead and they remained ahead for each phase. So 40-1 for the Namibia compared to 50-2 by the Netherlands in the power play. So 10 runs and 1 wicket worse. 10 runs better, 1 wicket worse. 77-2 for the Netherlands in 10 overs. So they maintain that 10-12 run lead. And they are the equal amount of number of wickets down. 119 for 3 in 15 overs. So now you still are 11 runs ahead. And then they chase the total down in 18 overs. So had Namibia just gone a wee bit faster or batted a wee bit faster, this could have been a thriller. But at that same time, I'd like to give Scotty Edwards, the captain, a lot of credit. He saw the left-handers up top. Aryan Dutt bowls 3 power play overs, the off spinner to the left-handers. He takes 1 for 13 in those 3 power play overs. And I think that was genius by Scotty Edwards. He also milked an over of Lion Cachet, who just goes for 6 runs, right? So he bowls his off spinners at the right time. And I think that was really, really smart.
So he's a very good captain for Aryan Dutt, because I don't know if you remember the 50 over World Cup. He was a death bowler. He was getting stumpings in the 48th in the 50 over World Cup. And now he's opening the bowling and rolling through the power play, bowled the entire power play, didn't he? He looked great, and they didn't quite, he had a helpful pitch, but that's what good captains do. They spot opportunities. They go, this is my Aryan Dutt pitch. I'm going to bowl him now. Very good captaincy. And I think clarity of role again, Levitt just came out and banged it. And when you're chasing 155, he's great, isn't he?
Yeah.
And he faced 15 balls. He scored 28 runs and hit 3 sixes and broke the back of... When you're chasing 155, that's enough. Like, smack it for 15 balls. Don't be 15 off 15. We've seen a lot of openers getting a run of ball today, including Ayoub, who can hit sixes, and including Freilich, who can smoke it everywhere. Like, come out and belt it. And that's what he did. I thought... The thing I said at the time during the chase... just before a reasonably important drop catch, was I'd be really surprised if the Netherlands ice this with no complaints, like no drama. I'd be really surprised if they just do a professional job and smash it. And actually, I think Steenkamp dropped Ackerman when he was like runnable 13 or something.
Yeah, he was runnable 13. Ackerman ultimately scores 32. So that drop catch really could have tilted things, or... if not tilted things in Namibia's favour, at least they could have come back to level peggings, right? But that drop catch kind of breaks the back of Namibia. And it's not like...
Oh, that was it.
Yeah, it's not like the Netherlands didn't make mistakes. Scotty Edwards missed a run-out chance. Baster Leader dropped Lofty Eaton when he was on 21. And then there was a subsequent run-out chance missed. There were missed fields for the Netherlands. But when it comes down to the shortest format, it's a game of really fine margins. And the Steenkamp drop came at a really bad time for Namibia. A wicket there could have made things interesting.
It could have made things interesting, but from that moment on, it wasn't interesting as far as the who's going to win this match is concerned.
Yeah.
They did a really good job, Netherlands, and they will be booting themselves that they didn't beat Pakistan.
Yeah.
Because Pakistan were there for the taking, and how much fun would the table have been if they'd have won too?
I mean, look, I think they're a really highly skilled associate nation. And I also believe that, you know, sure, Max O'Dowd drops a catch. He might be a better DJ than he is a cricketer. Those are other conversations. But the Netherlands are the sort of team who are a sum of their parts. Today, that's exactly what they do, right? Everyone contributes with the ball. I mean, Logan van Beek, who was taken apart by Fahim Ashraf, he delivers 2 for 13 in 3 overs today. He has a good day. Aryan Dutt is utilized properly. Baster Leader... His all-round effort wins them the game. They really do combine as a team alongside Scott Edwards' captaincy, who have a penchant to surprise. And that's how they defeated the West Indies to make it to the ODI World Cup. And that's how they defeated England all those years ago, right? So I think that this is a team really who, if they had more exposure, they played more cricket, they would have improved, man. I mean, I don't know where Teja Nidamanaru is around these days, but I really liked him as well.
He's a lot of fun. Yeah, and he was instrumental in one of those qualifiers, wasn't he, when he went berserk in that huge chase. Can't say a surname, though, not after the long day that I've had. they're fun. They're fun, Netherlands. I know you won't share this, but I'm disappointed that they didn't beat Pakistan, because they had them on the rack, and it all came down to a drop catch and a very bad over, wasn't it? It was an over full of nonsense, that 19th. But anyway, on they go. They will really fancy themselves against the USA, and it's hard to see how they beat India, but it would be very funny if they did.
Yeah, I mean, look, I don't think they can beat India, but definitely, like, I can see them defeating the USA as well and running away with like 4 points. I think that, you know, overall, I like their composition. I feel like they've got just about enough firepower in there. They don't have exceptional firepower, but Levitt is exceptional. I love that guy. I mean, he really seems like someone who can take down pace for fun. He does struggle a wee bit versus spin, but I like the ceiling on the kid, and he's like 22 years of old or 22 years of age as well. Just some closing remarks on Namibia. Really, really baffled by Erasmus not going to Myburg again. This is the Kotla in Delhi. This is a ground with a history for leg spinners. Myburg is playing his first ever T20 international. He's taken none for two in two overs. He's your most economical bowler. How have you not given him another over and trusted Lofty Eaton?
Yeah, like I say, I think Namibia made mistakes in the clarity of role thing, which the Dutch absolutely didn't. It was the other way round, wasn't it? That, you know, how well Edwards used the bowlers and at the right times. And he got good stuff out of people that you wouldn't necessarily expect to get it out of. Like Arjen Dutt, I can see why he would be good on that pitch. Less so, like Van Beek's numbers were quite surprising, considering the stuff that he bowls. Like I wouldn't have thought that he'd be ultra successful.
And also it was weird that Van Beek was good in all the phases, right? In the power play, he concedes like one, well, he bowls an over, concedes five runs. Ends with 2 for 13 in three overs. That is not Logan Van Beek. I like him, but he's not supposed to be that good.
Yeah, I think... as we've said many times before, if you're a lesser team, you have to overperform. And you can do a lot of that before the game, getting your tactics right. And and you need smart guys and girls to help with that. And, you know, you don't have to worry about enormous egos when you're managing an associate side, usually. You know, you don't have to keep Babar happy, do you? You've got to go, guys, like the Dutch did, we've all got to pull together. And what I need, if this guy doesn't, I need you to step up. And that's what the Dutch did today. I think Namibia will feel like they missed out. They didn't go hard enough. They didn't use their resources very well. And if you want to win when you're not favourites, when you're second favourites, you have to do clever things. You have to do the batting order right, the bowling order right, the changes right, got to field well, all that sort of stuff. And that's what I'm screaming at the TV every time I watch one of these teams. So I've seen do brilliant, you know, brilliant cricket loads of times. You've got to bring it in World Cups. You can't have your stars go missing. But if you do, you've got to do clever things. And they didn't do the clever things, did they? They did silly things.
I mean, if you've got a wrist spinner who's playing as a frontline wrist spinner, I'm not sure if Myburg bats or not, but he was doing well. You should have given him some more overs. I think he used Bernard Scholtz really well. That's the one good thing that Erasmus did. I mean, he bowled well in the power play, took a wicket, and then there were just three runs conceded off Scholtz last over. He ends up with 1 for 27. So I think he's someone who could potentially do well. Trumpelman has an off day, and he's much better than that. I feel like Namibia, without David Visa, are just not as good. That's what it comes down to, and it's unfortunate, but we've seen them do well in the past. I'm not sure they can win a game in this tournament. I feel like if they're playing the USA, I'm backing the USA.
Interesting. That'd be fun. That'll be fun. And this is why World Cups are so great, because I want to watch Namibia playing and I want to watch the USA. I want to watch to see how Oman are going to get on. And, you know, Zimbabwe are top of their group at the moment, by the way. True. I want to see Nepal. Like, Nepal should have beat England. You know, they really should.
Yeah.
Nepal were like 80% to beat England at one point. And Netherlands were 80% to beat Pakistan at one point. Like, we're so close to having both of those win. And then we can really start banging at the ICC's door to allow these so-called lesser teams to play more at the top table, because I don't particularly want to watch the same eight teams playing each other all the time. Yeah. I want to see teams coming through. The Football World Cup is awesome. I don't care at all about football when it's on a normal day, because it's the same players playing for the same teams against each other all the time. And, you know, passing the ball around at the back, I couldn't care less. It really bores me. When the World Cup happens, Panama are playing, I'm all in. Yes, please. I want to see North Korea. I want to see people that I don't normally see. I want to see how Trinidad get on. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Please give us more teams and give these teams more exposure, because Nepal's crowd is amazing. Like, they're super fun.
And the fun hats as well. I love those hats. Yeah. I want one of those hats, man.
I want one of those hats. And why the hell isn't Jared providing us with these hats?
Yeah. Honestly, Jared hasn't even provided us with those good areas hats, which I'm really disappointed about. He, at the very least, could have done that.
Yeah, selfish.
Don't fire me, Jared. I would say this, that, you know, there is one way to integrate associate teams more, and we've seen a bit of this in the Pakistan tri-series. You have a T20 bilateral series, chuck in another associate nation, have a tri-series. That's the best way to kind of give them more exposure.
100%. Tri-Series are awesome anyway. I really miss the ODI Tri-Series that we used to have all the time. ODI being obviously the best format of cricket.
Varun,
give me
close your ears.
But yeah, give me more Canada. Give me more Nepal. I watch England play all the time and they just infuriate me. I want to watch these sides. But when they do get here, I just want, like, Nepal, great. Like, played really great. USA, I thought, played pretty good in the first one. I want to see them managing the resources optimally, and they will turn these teams over. Because as we saw today, there are bowlers that get completely underestimated in these World Cup. They just go, oh, we're playing this team and we're 95% to win, so everything's going to be fine. I can't remember who it was interviewed the other day, and they basically said, oh yeah, we'll watch that later. You know, we'll see how they go later. And the disrespect should be punished, but you, like I say, you got to do the right stuff. Hopefully these teams will be managed slightly better in future.
There needs to be an effort to grow the game via T20 cricket, because it's the best format to grow the game, and the ICC really needs to help associates a bit more. We say this every T20 World Cup. I mean, the USA qualified for the Super 8s in the last T20 World Cup. And there's a fun Super Chat on the same subject. If Rakshit, you could bring that up. Abhijit Shivanandan has sent this Super Chat. And let's just do a speed round on Super Chats and end this show, because we're past the hour mark. Abhijit says, after all the associates have played, how do you rate their chances? Also, is McMullen the best all-rounder from an associate nation currently? I suppose after today's performance, you'd have to say Bas Dalida might be the best all-rounder, all things considered. But funny that you mentioned McMullen, because Scotland probably have the best chance of upsetting England, potentially, and making it to the Super 8 round, right? Like, if I had to put money on one associate nation after all that we've seen thus far, because, you know, we've seen some very, very weird games in the sense that associates pushed the full member nations hard, but then they succumbed. Scotland find themselves in a position where I feel like they could make it to the Super 8 round. And that's what Abhijit Nandan says in his following Super Chat. That's what he asks. Do you agree, Rob?
To answer that question on the screen there, can any associate nation break into Super 8? Of course they can. Absolutely they can. I don't know which one's going to do it this time. It's not going to be Italy, I don't think. I don't see how it's Canada. I don't see how it's UAE. But there are teams. It could be Nepal. Like, Nepal were great. Nepal were great against England. They didn't get over the line. Like,
true.
West Indies are there for the taking. You know, West Indies are, you can't bank on them behaving themselves through, you know, four games in a row. That hasn't happened for 5 years.
Absolutely.
Scotland, I don't see how the bowling stands up. I don't see how the bowling stands up against an onslaught for Scotland. Maybe they can. But they all bowl the same way, though.
Have you noticed how every single person in Scotland does this little finger tweak thing? You cannot tell whether it's an off spinner or a medium pacer. They're all these nerdlers who, if they get a slow pitch, they're going to be potent. And England, if they find England at a slow pitch, they're crumbling for 120, aren't they?
Yes, England just want Rhodes all the time. I think they've been quite lucky with where the venues have panned out. You know, if they were playing on Sri Lankan dust bowls, I don't think they'd make the Super 8. It'd be interesting to see how Australia go in this competition, because they're so bad against spin. You know, they're relentlessly terrible at it. I guess we start finding out how Australia go tomorrow, don't we? Is that tomorrow against Ireland?
Yeah, of course,
one of them can break into it, but I just want to see more associate nations playing bigger teams more often, because everybody seems to think it's going to be crap, and it ain't. Like, they've ran them really close so far in this World Cup. It was the New Zealand chase was disappointing, you know, none down, 15 overs, whatever it was. That's going to happen sometimes, because there's a huge gulf in financial resources and squad sizes and power and all the rest of it. But that gulf doesn't close unless the ICC, with infinite money that is given to like 2.5 teams, start spreading it out a bit, you know, spread it out a bit, let these people play.
Yeah.
And if what we really want to happen is, you know, Netherlands to stuff India, then people start talking. You know, that it probably needs something like that to happen, which is why, even as an Englishman, you know, following a side that winds me up to hell for God knows how many years, I wanted Nepal to do it at the end the other day. It would have been great. Yeah, it would have been great.
Let's see
how we go.
I think the best chance for any associate team to go forward is in that England-West Indies group, because I think the India-Pakistan group is kind of settled. And the same goes for the Australia-Sri Lanka one, because Oman is the only associate team and no way in hell are they making it in the next round. And then there is South Africa, New Zealand and Afghanistan in one group. So that's going to be tough for the associates over there as well. Anyway, Shivam or Shubham Mishra with a super chat says, why could the Park commentator not say the word Shubham? He kept calling him Shubman. He's not Shubman Gill. He's Shubham and I'm a Shubham. I love the fact that you're a Shubham and you can expect all Pakistan commentators to completely cock up all the names. The other day, Waqar Yunus called Abrar Ahmed Abrarul Haq. Abrarul Haq is a folk singer in Pakistan. He's not even a cricketer. So I think I've answered that question. Let's move forward, Rakshit. Let's do a quick speed round over here. Andy B, another one for him. Thank you. What have you made of Brevis's recent form? I love Baby Abi. I think he's the king of no-look shots. I think he's going to have a really stellar career in both franchise T20s and international cricket. Big fan right here.
Also, terrifying man to bowl against. You've got to get him out quick. He hasn't scored any runs in the last few, but he finished the... Who does he play for? The Capitals. He finished that one, the SA20, in blazing form. So form in the last week, crap, fine. Who cares about warm-ups? Couldn't care less. Warm-ups mean nothing. But he got 100 in the final and he got 75 not out in the semi, I think. And maybe 50 the game before that. He's a terrifying man. He's such a good six hitter. He's still only 22, I want to say. His ceiling is extremely high. I don't care that he hasn't got any runs in the last week. It doesn't really matter. You got to get him out quick, or that is a team that can win this World Cup, South Africa.
Yeah, absolutely. I think they're proper contenders, and he's young, Baby AB, so anything could happen. Andy B says, what are India's holes? Have their chances shrunk? India on a flat deck would annihilate anyone. They play a different sport on flat decks. I feel like when they get a tricky surface, maybe they're, approach someday backfires. That could be one way that they lose, but I still feel that they have the least amount of holes of any team in this T20 World Cup. I am yet to, if I look back at all teams that have ever featured in a T20 World Cup, I feel like India's squad might be the best we've seen, and they are the most hot favourites that have ever started in a tournament, and they're playing at home as well.
Yeah, they've got all the money. They're allowed to choose where they play and where other people play and all that sort of thing, but they have got the best team and they've got the biggest squad, and they could probably replace anyone with someone that's nearly as good.
Yeah.
However, if you're looking for holes in India, Abhishek's not very well, played with a big temperature, and he's not travelled to the next one.
Okay.
That's a big deal. That's a big deal, right? He got first baller when he had a 105 degree temperature, I read today. And he hasn't travelled for game number two, is what I heard this afternoon. So that's a big deal. Ishan Kishan has suddenly appeared as amazing for India, which didn't happen for a while.
Think of how Jaiswal isn't being talked about and he's not even in the squad, right? So they've got a wealth of riches at their disposal. I mean, I don't think they have many holes, but because it's the, T20 World Cup, it's a volatile format, there is no guarantee that they win it. Although anything but a trophy lift would be considered to be a failure.
Well, Bumrah missed the first game because apparently he wasn't very well. And he hasn't been that guy for a while since the injury. I don't think he's been quite there. Sure, he's bowled, he's taken some big wickets and whatever, but he's been hit for sixes, which never used to happen.
True.
If you can make a case against India, they also have a slightly underexposed sort of lower order because the top order do a lot of whacking in the game. They've got such a high win percentage. Obviously, they're favourites. They are 40%. As I talk to you now, 40% to win this World Cup. They're not overwhelming, nailed-on certainties. That 60% somebody else wins. There are holes. You've got to get them on a bad day, I think. If India performs to their potential, you've lost.
They're not a great catching team of recent times either, so that's true. Another hole, I suppose. Anyway, let's go forward. I want to end this show. We're 8 minutes over what I thought we would be. Shubham Mishra, are you kidding me? Formal request for a quick 10-minute preview of next day's games at the end of each of these wraps. Quick predictions for the next day vibes. Look, because you've given us money, I'll do quick predictions for you. Tell me, Rob, what are the games tomorrow? I haven't even looked at that. These 12-hour shifts with shows on either side are killing me.
Yeah, I know. I mean, I started watching cricket 13 hours ago and we're still banging on about it.
True.
I mean, what day is it today?
It's day 4. Let's go day 5. Give me the games, I'll give you the predictions and you can give your predictions as well.
Yeah, all right, fair enough. We have Afghanistan against South Africa.
South Africa.
Followed by Australia against Ireland.
Australia.
Followed by 22 clowns playing against each other. England against the West Indies.
Ooh, I'm going to go with the West Indies in this one, man. I have got a funny feeling. What about you?
Well, it's 67% England, which seems like quite a high amount to me, according to the betting markets. Genuinely don't know that game. I'll tell you what, it's going to be a tie, that match. And we'll see who does it in the Super Over. You heard it here first.
All right, we've done the predictions. Let's move on to the last Super Chat of the day. Thank the Lord, Abhijit Shivanandan with a fourth Super Chat, I believe. He says, Bas Dalida seems like an anchor, hence I back McMullen. Bas Dalida is a better bowler than Brandon McMullen, so that's why I went with a more complete all-rounder, although I do rate Brandon McMullen's batting. I think he's very, very explosive, very dynamic, love him. Any notes to add, Rob, before we end this? We all need to go home and sleep, buddy.
He's not a real person, Brandon McMullen. He replaced Brendan McCullum in computer games when you got to the end of the series. So
yes.
I still don't think he's real.
Yeah, he is AI. Dodgy AI at that. Anyway, thank you so much, everyone, for all of your interactions and your super chats as well. We greatly do appreciate them. Rob, it's always a pleasure. I was kind of looking forward to the show, and I think we did our best. And apologies to everyone whoever keeps complaining that I cut off Rob. Just know that if I don't cut off Rob, this would be a two-hour show.
Yeah, we would never ever finish if Baron didn't cut me off.
Yep. Anyway,
it's my fault, not his.
We'll be back once again tomorrow at the end of day 5 of the T20 World Cup. You guys continue to be champions. Follow Combox everywhere. Like, share, subscribe, do all of that fun stuff. And that'll be all for today. Have a good one, folks, and goodbye.
Thank you for listening to this podcast on the Combox Network. There is an ad-free version of this you can find by supporting us on Patreon at Good Areas Podcast. You can also access our Discord channel there. Please like, subscribe, and rate this show. Every one of these helps us. If there was a guest on a show, you can find their links in the show notes. Huge thanks to Rakshit, Ishit, and everyone else who helps us get our content out there. If you want to know more about us, head to combox.tv. If you make a lot of content like me, oh, you are going to need help. And that is why we use Minvo.pro, a slicing and dicing tool that uses AI to conjure up incredible clips from your podcasts and meetings. If you make content, go to Minvo.pro to cut it.